I hope you all remember where we stopped last.
Verse 3.
Very good.
Chapter 15. So, what we have to keep in mind as we are going through the final 6 chapters of the Gita. As you all know that the final 6 chapters of the Gita deal with Jnana Yoga. And this topic of Jnana Yoga discussion has started in chapter 13. Now, how did Krishna start to speak about Jnana Yoga? He used 2 words. One is called Kshetra and one is Kshetrajna. Okay? But what we discuss in chapter 13, that although there are so many terms used, Purusha, Prakriti, Atma, Anatma, Kshetra, Kshetrajna, so many terms, different terms are used. Yet in reality, there are only 2 components. What is that? Matter and consciousness. So, Prakriti is what?
Matter.
Purusha is? Consciousness. Kshetra is?
Matter.
Kshetrajna is? Consciousness. So, whatever terms you use, ultimately there are only 2 components in this whole creation. So, what was chapter 13? Chapter 13 is trying to understand the differences between these 2 components. What is matter? What is Kshetrajna? And to understand that, we need Viveka. What is Viveka?
Intellect.
Our intellect, to understand. Because matter we can see, we can experience with our 5 senses. Your body, is it matter?
Yes, yes.
I can experience. But consciousness is something which is beyond matter, which is not available to our senses. So first we have to understand by Viveka. Viveka comes from the root word vik, V-I-C, which means to separate. So we must use our consciousness to understand what is matter, what is consciousness. And we went through all the properties of matter, properties of consciousness. One basic fundamental point we have to remember is that matter has got no life, it is inert. Consciousness is full of life. It is consciousness that lends its life to matter, and that's why our bodies, which are made of matter, can function. Our mind, which is made of matter, can think. It is because of the consciousness enlivening it. So this was explained to us in chapter 13. Then in chapter 14, Krishna talked about the gunas. Why is it that we are continuously, you see, we are made of 2 components, right? So we all know that we are also made of matter and consciousness. But why is it that we are unable to accept that we are consciousness? If I ask you who you are, how would you answer? You say, my name is so-and-so, my spouse is so-and-so, my parents are so-and-so, my children's names are this, this is the job function which I do, these are my desires, my aspirations, all these belong to what? Body or matter, right? But you never say, if I ask you who are you don't say aham atma asmi, isn't it? Now, why is that we come, it's not that we don't have the knowledge. Some of us have the knowledge that we are, the scriptures are telling us, you are not this body, you are not this matter, which is a temporary covering you have put on. Just like you put on these clothes, you go back, you change to another set of clothes. The clothes is not you. This is what the scriptures are telling you. You are Atman, you are not this body, it's only a temporary covering. But yet, why is it we cannot accept? What is the problem? Why is it we cannot accept this? Why can't we accept this?
Attachment
to what?
Body.
Attachment to this body. Our very strong attachment to this body. We cannot let go the fact that we are this body. The day we are born, we are told, we are given a name, this is your body. You look at your identity card, it tells you your name, your date of birth, your place of birth. All these what belong to what? Matter. So one is because of our strong attachment to this body. And when we have this strong attachment to the body, we are also attached to everything the body is attached to. Relations, possessions, positions, name, fame, etc. Everything, title, all this we are attached to. So we find it difficult to let go. Number one. Number two, what is the other problem? Why we cannot accept that we are this Atman, this consciousness?
Desires.
Impurity of the mind. Anger, ego, jealousy, envy, pride, all these are the impurities in our mind. How are we, therefore, to slowly... So one problem is attachment. Therefore, the solution is what? Detachment. So, vairagyam, that's what Krishna has been talking about. Vairagyam. Practice detachment. We'll be talking about that today. So, vairagyam. So, one is vairagyam, detachment. The other is to cultivate the good qualities. How do I overcome the negative qualities? I cultivate the good qualities. Slowly by slowly, I eradicate my negative qualities. So humility, love, compassion, honesty, all these I have to cultivate. So chapter 14 tells us, because of the three gunas, sattvic, rajasic, tamasic, this soul is bound to the body. So if you look at it this way, soul is a piece of wood. We want to understand how it is bound. Soul is a piece, soul means Atman, is a piece of wood. World is represented by magnet. Can magnet pull the wood? No, right? Body is metal. Okay? Magnet, the world can attract the body. It can attract your body, it can attract your senses, it can attract your mind. But wood cannot be attracted by metal. It is pure. But the wood is attached to the metal by the three ropes. What are the three ropes? The three gunas. So when you are bound by the three gunas to the body, to the mind, then what happens when the magnet pulls the body? Automatically the Atman also gets pulled. So we are deluded. What we are now in a state of delusion due to our attachment to the body, due to the impurities in our mind, we are all in a state of delusion. We have to come out of the state of delusion. And there's a beautiful Upanishad called the Mundaka Upanishad, which explains to us actually our whole life in a very simple analogy. Using the analogy of a tree, it says in this Upanishad, on this tree sit two birds. Have you also analogy of the two birds, right, in the Mundaka Upanishad? So what does the tree represent?
Our body.
Tree represents our body. And what do the two birds represent? What do the two birds represent? The two birds are in the tree. That means these two birds are in our body. So who are the two birds?
Okay.
One you can say, one is Atma and one is Jiva. Atma is consciousness. Now, the Jiva bird sits on the lower branch. The Atma bird sits on the higher branch. So what does the Jiva bird do? The Jiva bird hops from branch to branch to branch. It sees fruits on the tree and it eats some fruit. If the fruit is sweet, it has a enjoyable experience. Then it hops to another branch, it eats another fruit, the fruit turns out to be bitter, it has a unfavorable experience. It goes on from fruit to fruit to fruit, enjoying favorable and unfavorable experiences. Until one day it particularly comes to and bites into a very, very bitter fruit. Then what happens? Very bitter fruit means very painful experience in life. Then what happens? Then it starts thinking of God, isn't it? So what does the Jiva bird do? It turns up and looks at the Atman bird. That means the Atman is in us, the Jiva also is. The Jiva is the temporary deluded soul, which accepts that I am this body, which goes on hopping from one experience to another experience, sometimes happy, sometimes bitter. Until one day a very bitter experience happens and the Jiva bird says, is there something else? And starts looking at God. So now this Jiva bird has seen the Atman bird. What is the Atman bird doing? What does the Atman in your body do?
Weakness.
It's a weakness. It doesn't hop from tree to tree. It is not interested in the fruits. It is observing, it is witnessing everything. So now the Jiva bird starts hopping towards the Atman bird. Halfway while hopping there, suddenly the Jiva bird sees another fruit and says what? Let me try and see, maybe this might turn out to be a better experience. And temporarily what happened? It forgets the Atman again. This is our experience. This is what the Upanishad is saying. Until and unless we come to accept that we are this Atman bird, we will continue to remain as the Jiva bird. And we will continue to go through favorable and unfavorable experiences. So what these chapters are trying to point out to us, to understand our highest reality, understand who you are. It is not an easy process, it is not an overnight process, because as I say, so many impurities have to be removed. So in chapter 15, Krishna used the allegory of the tree to explain to us how this Jiva, this, because there are three entities, there's Brahman. All the Upanishads talk about three entities. There's Brahman, the Supreme Consciousness. There's this world which we have to interact with. And there is this Jiva who is in the body. So the interaction is between Jiva and the world. But we also have to understand our relationship with Brahman. So using that tree, he explained the whole relationship to us. We already went through that. Now the question is, he says, we are bound. We are bound to this body. So the next question will be, how do we detach ourselves from this body? And he spoke about four sadhanas. So in verse number 3, he mentioned the very first sadhana. And what is that sadhana in verse number 3? In the second half of verse 3, we were speaking about this when we stopped our class. Second half of verse number 3, he spoke about vairagya. Vairagya, as I told you, is detachment. And when we talk about vairagya detachment, what do we mean by detachment? It is not physical detachment. Many people mistake and think that I have to leave my home, leave my family, give away all my possessions and go and sit in a cave. That is not detachment. Because until you have understood mentally what is detachment, even you go and sit in a cave, where is your mind? It is in the world. So detachment is not physical detachment. What is detachment therefore? What do you mean by mental detachment? What do you mean by mental detachment?
Not affected by.
He explains this by saying, you must take a strong axe and cut the roots. Like how do you kill a tree? If you want to kill the tree, that means your attachment to the world, the only way is to cut the roots totally and sharply, use a sharp axe and cut all the roots. That means you must totally detach from the world. So what does this detachment mean? Asanga. What does it mean? And he says strong acts of detachment, not just weak detachment. What is weak detachment? What is weak detachment?
It's like the small bird, the first bird that is a fruit and it goes back to it. It's attracted by something.
Weak detachment is, I will try this life, it cannot, never mind. Hinduism says for next life also, I will come back again, no problem. That is weak detachment. Strong detachment is what? This life itself, I want to attain that moksha. There must be a strong, firm commitment in us. That is called strong detachment. And what is detachment? Detachment means reducing our dependence on the world. That is detachment. Right now, our happiness, our source of happiness, our source of security is totally dependent on the world. And we have discussed this before. Why should we not be dependent on the world for our security and happiness? Because the world is temporary. It is constantly subject to change. People are changing, objects are changing, situations are changing. Then you might ask the question, what is the purpose of the world? Why should I live in the world? If you say don't find happiness from the world, don't find security in the world, why should I live in the world? The world is there for us to discharge our responsibilities and our duties, to give love, to give compassion, to burn our karmas and to rise spiritually. That's why we've been put into this bhuloka, this environment. That's why we've been given the human body. Understand the purpose of the human body, understand the purpose of the world. Purpose is not to get attached. Purpose is to serve the world, to do your duties and responsibilities without expecting the world to look after you. So that is called detachment. That was the first sadhana he gave. We must practice this. Shifting from world dependence to God dependence. That is the first sadhana. Then the second sadhana he gave, now I have used the wrong word for the second sadhana. It is actually, what I gave you was jnana yoga. Did I give you the second?
No,
I
didn't.
Brahma vichara. Okay, cut that out. It's actually mumukshutvam. Mumukshutvam means, now once we detach from the world, once we are not going to be dependent on the world, we cannot leave the mind also alone. So the scripture said, turn your mind towards God. Mumukshutva means have that burning desire for moksha. You must search for something higher in life. So, what is that higher in life here? In verse number 4, he speaks about the second sadhana, which is called, in technical terms, it is called mumukshutva. Okay? And how does he explain this sadhana? So he says, if you look at verse number 4, tatha. So the word tatha is there. Tatha means thereafter. Thereafter means what? After you have withdrawn from the world, you must seek something. You cannot leave your mind unoccupied. So tatha means having withdrawn from the world, fix your mind on something, on higher goals in life, higher values in life. So this does not mean suppression. Very important to understand. We do not withdraw from the world out of disgust or out of suppression. We withdraw from the world by understanding the nature of the world. If the world cannot give me everlasting happiness, why should I pursue the world? You see, there was a little story I read. Many of you might have heard this story. There was a man sitting on the beach. He was admiring the sunset, very happy, very peaceful. He was sitting down admiring the sunset. Another man came along, and this man, the second man, is very restless type of person, always needs to do something. So he sees the first man sitting there, not doing anything, so calm, so peaceful. He says, why are you wasting your time? Just sitting down there doing nothing, go and do something. So the young man says, what do you want me to do? He says, look, you are at the beach, right? Go and open a fruit stall. Sell some fruits. Make some money. Why are you sitting down wasting time? So the young man said, okay, I open a fruit stall, make some money, then do what? He said, then when one stall is successful, you are making money, open a few more stalls, chain stalls, make more money. Then the man said, okay, after that what? Then when you have so many chain stalls, you are able to buy in big quantity, then you buy and do export. So earn more money. Okay, he says, then what? Then when you are doing domestic and export business, you have a big empire, you hire managers to run the day-to-day business. So the young man said, after that, then what? Then he says, you sit down and relax and enjoy. He says, that's what I'm doing now. So why you ask me, come back and sit down and relax? I'm already relaxed now. That means what? Why are we running here and there? Why are we running here and there? Why are you running here and there, chasing after this, chasing after that? Not you. You, I know good people here, talking generally about this.
Deluded, delusion.
The very fact that you are running after the world, looking for happiness, isn't it? You earn money for what?
Yes.
To buy things. Why you want to buy things? For happiness. You enter into whatever you do, you earn, you look for happiness. When you say, I'm looking for happiness, means what?
Looking out for it.
Means what are you telling everybody?
Happy.
That I'm not happy. You're admitting that I'm not happy, isn't it? When you say, I'm looking for happiness, means right now I'm not happy. But what the scriptures are telling you, look inward, find that source of eternal happiness which is within you. Once you found that source of eternal happiness, you need not look for happiness anywhere else. And you are the very source of that happiness. But the problem is what? You do not understand this at the moment. Why again? Because we come back to the impurities in the mind, because we come back to the attachment to this body. So first of all, he says, turn your direction towards that goal. Seek that highest goal. So tatha, seek that highest goal which is called Brahman. And what is that? He calls it tat padam. So you see in the first line in the Sanskrit words, tat padam, that is that goal. Now when he says tat padam, that goal, parimargitavyam, you must seek for it. Parimargitavyam means seek that goal. So when we say parimargitavyam, seek that goal, means what? You must always keep that goal in mind. Do not lose sight of this goal. Do not forget the fact what you are seeking. Have that goal in mind. But when we say have that goal in mind, when I say that goal, what is your impression? What is your impression when I say seek that goal?
What far away.
It's something far away, right? That means God is sitting somewhere in heavens. But the Upanishads tell us, where is that goal?
Within you.
So don't get misled and think that goal is somewhere, I've got to travel somewhere to seek that goal. No, that goal is learning to turn inward. And the mind can only turn inward when the impurities are removed. To quieten the mind to turn inward, first I have to remove the impurities. So first he says, understand that goal. Do not lose sight of the goal. And in the Taittiriya Upanishads, it is said that this goal is found in the cave. It says that this goal is found in the cave of your heart. So that's why you find all the spiritual people, when they want to find God, what they do?
They
go and sit in the cave and meditate on God. But where is this cave?
In your heart.
It's within you. So when you say heart means what? Heart means understanding the very essential nature. That's why then this Upanishad goes on to explain the five koshas, the five sheets. I'm sure you would have gone through this. The Annamaya kosha. The scripture asks you to think first. Who are you? So in order to understand who I am, I have to negate first who I am not. So first of all, we identify with what?
Body.
Body, the scripture says, is called Annamaya kosha. The word Annam means what? Food. This body depends on food. Your body is the nature of what you eat. Isn't that in English what we say? You are what you eat. So first of all, the scripture says, you are not Annamaya kosha. Because why? Annamaya kosha also is temporary and subject to change. Then you say, okay, I am not Annamaya kosha. So I am something else. What? Pranamaya kosha, the second layer. What is Pranamaya kosha? It is the five vital systems that support your body. The incoming breath, outgoing breath, the expelling of all waste products from your body, the circulation of all the food products to the various organs, all these are the pranas in you that control all these physiological functions. So your hunger, your thirst, etc. These are the pranas that support your body, five pranas. But the scriptures say you are also not the prana, because the pranas also are subject to change, subject to modification. Then it says, come to the third layer, Manomaya Kosha, the mind. Are you the mind? No. Why? Because the mind also is a bundle of emotions, constantly changing. One day I am happy, one day I am sad, one day I am at peace, one day I am at stress. So you are also not the mind. Okay, come to more subtle, Vijnanamaya Kosha. Vijnanamaya Kosha is our intellect. You are also not the intellect. Why? Because your knowledge also is constantly subject to change. Then go to one more layer. What is that? Anandamaya Kosha. Are you that Anandamaya Kosha? No. Why? So what is Anandamaya Kosha? It is bliss. But what type of bliss is this? When you go to sleep, and assuming you are not dreaming, are you at peace? You are at absolute bliss, absolute peace. Why? Because you do not know of anything. You are not aware of your body, you are not aware of your mind, you are not aware of your intellect. That is Anandamaya Kosha. But that also is not you. Why? Because you have to wake up also. So that is also temporary bliss. Then who are you then?
Consciousness.
So how do I know that consciousness? How do I know that consciousness?
Because the consciousness enlightens the body.
So consciousness is the one that is experiencing all these five shifts. I am experiencing my body during waking stage. I am experiencing my mind during dream stage. I am experiencing my intellect when I am getting knowledge. And when I am asleep, I am also experiencing. Why? Because when I wake up, I said I was asleep. So there is, the scriptures are telling you, there is this something in you which is the consciousness, which is not these five layers. Understand, try to understand that consciousness. That is your goal. That is the goal, to be rich where? Within you, within the cave. Cave means something that is hidden. Because when somebody goes into a cave, you can't see him. So this consciousness is hidden within you. You have to try to understand it. Try to seek that goal. So, parimargitavyam tat padam. Seek that goal. Now, then he says, what happens when you attain this goal? When you understand that I am this consciousness, I am not this body. So, what happens when you... Now, when you hold on to temporary support, what happens? Anything that is temporary. What happens when you are dependent on a temporary support? Whether it's a person, you fall in love with a person. Today the person says, I love you. Tomorrow the person says, I don't love you. Whether it is an object, you find anandam in the object. So nowadays, you see, that's why the Swamijis are called what? Brahma Anandam, Satyam Anandam, you know, all of them got Anandam, you know. So we are also Anandam, but what type of Anandam? We have iPhone Anandam, we have fashion Anandam, we have movie Anandam, all are temporary Anandams. So what he is saying, when you depend on temporary Anandam, then there is bound to be temporary happiness. But he says, once you discover this internal permanent Anandam within you, then he says what? So the goal, once you reach that goal, yasmin gata, once you attain that goal, nivartanti bhuya. Bhuya means again, nivartanti, you won't return. Now what does it mean? You hear that, you get scared. You say, what, I reached the goal, I don't come back anymore. So what do you mean? It says, when you reach that goal, bhuya nivartanti, bhuya, you will not, nivartanti, you won't return anymore. You won't return anymore means what?
You won't have what?
No, you have not reached that goal of moksha yet. So this return does not mean you don't come back. What does this return mean? Once you have understood and accepted that I am Atman, I am not this body, while living, understand, this is while you are living. So what is it?
Accumulating karma. You become a jivan mukti. Right?
Yeah, so
jivan.
What is it that you don't return to? You don't return to the dependence on the world. You are no more subject to dependence on the world. You don't go back to your old way of living, your old way of thinking. So you are completely different now. Your body doesn't change, your understanding has changed now. So all that agitation, frustration, anger, everything is removed. You don't go back to your old lifestyle once you understand. And I told this story at the retreat. How many of you were at the retreat? Okay, only two or three. So I'll tell you the story again. So what is this story? To understand who you are. This story is in the Mahabharata. And it is told about Sage Vyasa. That Sage Vyasa, one day was standing on the banks of the river Yamuna. And he wanted to cross over. Because it was late at night, he wanted to go back. But the waters were very turbulent. So none of the boatmen was willing to take him across. So he was standing there wondering what to do. When along came a group of gopis. So they came and they also wanted to cross the Yamuna to reach back to their husbands, to their homes. And the boatmen all refused to take them. So they went to Sage Vyasa. They said, "You please help us, you know, it's getting late, we have to go back." And Vyasa said, "Look, right now I am very hungry. Give me something to eat." So they gave him all whatever they had, milk they had, curds they had, everything he had from every gopi, he took and took and took everything and had and had and had until he was totally full. Then they said, "Okay, now that you have satisfied your hunger, at least help us now." He said, "Okay, don't worry." So he went to the banks of the Yamuna, he stood there and he said, "Oh Mother Yamuna, if I have not eaten anything today, may you please part your waters and allow us to cross. If I have not eaten anything today." And the gopis were looking at him and saying, "Is he mad or what? Everything, we had everything, he had nicely finished everything and he's telling Mother Yamuna, if I have not eaten anything." But surprisingly, the waters parted and he and the gopis crossed over to the other side. So the moral of the story is what? Is that when Vyasa said, "If I have not eaten anything," what is that I? I is the consciousness. Because Vyasa was a very realized soul. He never identified himself with the body. So when he said, "If I have not eaten," the consciousness does not do any actions. It is a witness. So the Mother Yamuna understood and parted the waters. So our goal also is to reach that state. If we can consider ourselves as the consciousness, then we won't go back to the old way of living, the old way of thinking. So we are totally free from the shackles of this life. So he says that is the second sadhana. What is that? Mumukshutvam, the desire for moksha. Turn your mind to that goal. Don't ever lose sight of that goal. For every second of your life, understand that is the most precious goal in your life to attain. Then what is the third sadhana? Third sadhana, he explains in the third line of verse 4, which is called saranagati or surrender. Surrender. To reach your goal, your effort alone is not enough. Because don't say it is only my effort, only. Because then is what arrogance means. So, you must not think that my effort alone is enough. So what is there? There are so many obstacles in our life. Even when we are trying to reach that goal, we are very sincere. We want to reach that goal. But there will be innumerable obstacles in our life. So what should we do? We should always invoke the grace of the Lord to remove these obstacles. So this is like a prayer actually. It says here, prapadyate. Prapadyate means, I seek refuge. It's a prayer, like a prayer you can say. Prapadyate, I seek refuge. In what? Purusha, in that Purusha. Purusha is another name for Brahman, another name for God. It's Purusha. But what type of Purusha? Because you and I also are Purushas also. Right? So what type of Purusha? Adyam Purusha. The primal Purusha. The most original, the origin of all Purushas. So I seek refuge, Tam eva cha adhyam. Adhyam means that eternal Purusha. And where is this Purusha again? Within you. So, learn that attitude of surrender also. And what do you mean by surrender? See, what do you mean? You say, I surrender. What do you mean by surrender? So, what do you mean by surrender? So, how do you take that attitude when you say, I surrender? It means what? So, that means what? Whatever happens, whatever the result of my life, I surrender that to Lord means I accept. Positive, I accept. Negative, I accept. If it is favorable, it is coming from the Lord, I accept. If it is negative, it is also coming from the Lord, I accept. That is called surrender. So surrender means looking upon every experience as coming from the Lord. That is called surrender. So when we say surrender means what? To lazy people, when you say surrender, they are very happy. Because surrender means what? Don't do anything at all. I surrender everything. Food you send to my house, everything you send to my house, God, I surrender everything. Action you must do. Surrender the results, not surrender the action. Because he says in chapter 2, verse 47, Karmanevadikaraste, your right is to do your action, your duty. Surrender the results to me. Meaning accept. If it is favorable, accept. Non-favorable, accept. That is called surrender. So surrender to who also he mentions here? That Lord. Who is that Lord? Yatta, from whom? Purani Pravrti. Who is the eternal manifestation? He is the eternal Lord. So I surrender to that Lord. Who is the most eternal. So all the experiences I am going through, I surrender to that Lord. That is called Saranagati, total surrender. That is the third sadhana. Okay. So now how many sadhanas is given us? The first sadhana is Vairagyam, detachment. Second sadhana is Mumukshutvam, turn your direction towards Lord, have the desire for moksha. Third sadhana, Saranagati, surrender and seek the grace of the Lord. Now we come to the fourth sadhana. So, what is the fourth sadhana? Fourth sadhana, as I told you, what is the barrier that we can't accept that I am Atman is because of the impurities. So, for the fourth sadhana, he talks about sadgunas. Sadgunas means the right virtues that we must cultivate in our life. We must constantly seek to cultivate these virtues. In the next chapter 16, he is going to give us, somebody's horn is going off, 20 virtues. So 20 virtues, here he just gives you a summary, but in the next chapter 16, he will expand it to 20 virtues. Okay? So what are the qualities? These are called divine qualities that we must strive to cultivate. Okay, the very first one he gives in verse number 5 is called Nirmana. The most difficult thing for us to give up. That is our pride. Nirmana means freedom from that pride. Freedom from ego, vanity, superiority complex. Superiority complex born out of what? Born out of my name, my family background, my family did this and that, my fame, my position, my power, my money, all this the superiority complex. Not very easy to let go. Pride and arrogance. And how do we let go? How do we let go of this superiority complex? You know, I have this, I have so many cars, I have so many properties, I am a businessman, I have so many businesses. How do we let go of this? What is the attitude that we need to cultivate? This is temporary, number one.
It's all the grace of God.
Yeah. And if you remember chapter 10, verse 41, when Krishna spoke about all the glories, in chapter 10 he gave a whole long list of glories. He says, I am the brilliance in the sun, I am here, I am there. I am the brilliance, I am the taste in water, everything. He gave so many of his glories. At the end, he summarized in chapter 10, verse 41. He says, whatever glories there are in this current in this world, whatever which is glorious, everything comes from whom? Comes from Lord. So the very fact that I have money, that is a glory, comes from where? Comes from Lord. If I have beauty, where does the glory come from? From Lord. If I have a wonderful voice, I can sing marvelously. Where is, whose glory is that? It's not my glory, it is God's glory. Each and every glory that we have does not belong to us. It is by the grace of God that all these glories are there. So these glories are not my glories, they are Lord's glories. So that understanding must be in us. When we say it is His glory, means He can give it to us anytime. He can also take it away at any time. So first is Nirmana. Free yourself from this pride of all the things that you have. Second is Nirmoha. Moha, the word Moha, Moha means delusion. So Nirmoha means what? Freedom from delusion. And what is the greatest delusion we all live under? Nirmoha, freedom from delusion. What is the greatest delusion? What's the greatest delusion? Sorry?
We are permanent.
We expect permanence from the impermanent. We expect what? Permanence from the impermanent. We expect stability from the unstable. We expect total happiness from that which is finite. You expect infinite happiness from which is finite. So isn't that the greatest delusion we are living under? And actually there are three examples we go through life to understand that so far everything we've been chasing has never given us that total happiness. One is called Pratyaksha, our direct experience. Right? I wanted this phone. I chased after it. I saved money. I got it. I was happy. And then I saw another new model. And then what happens? I'm unhappy. I'm chasing after that model. So through my own experience over the years, I've understood that whatever I've chased after has never actually given me that total happiness. So one is Pratyaksha, direct experience. The second is called Anumana. Anumana means inference. By looking at other people's life also, I find that they seem to have everything. You know, I've met sometimes some businessmen who got everything in life. When they're with a group of friends, they talk very big. This, I have that, I've got this Mercedes car. When they're alone, that's when they express all their problems. They are never happy with whatever they have. If they have this, they want that. If they have that, they want that. So by other people's experience also, we come to understand that all these people are chasing and chasing and chasing and they are still not happy. They seem to have everything. They have a beautiful house, a beautiful car, a lot of bank balance money, they are traveling overseas for holidays, but yet they are not happy. So another is Anumana. I understand through other people's experience. And the third is through the scriptures. The scriptures are telling us, hey, you want the most ultimate happiness? You want the most highest happiness? The scriptures can give you that. You know, you want the most highest happiness. The scriptures say we can give you that. Where? Where is that happiness? The minimum you need one quality. To go to heaven, Swarga Loka, you can enjoy the maximum happiness, but minimum you need one quality. First you have to die, isn't it, then to go to heaven. So, the scriptures tell you, do all these prayers, do this dhanam, do this, do that, do yajnas, all you can reach Swarga Loka. But then the scriptures also tell you what? After that enjoyment, Swarga Loka, you still have to come back. That means what type of enjoyment is that?
Temporary.
Temporary happiness. So through our experience, through inference of other people's experience, through the scriptures, we understand that the world is temporal. And that's why we, but yet, what happens? We still don't take that advice, we still run after the world. So one of the, like now itself, one of the best examples of how we go through happiness and unhappiness, very good example in today's society is Facebook. You know how? Supposing now you go to a shop, you buy a nice blouse, what do you do? Selfie, right? Then what do? Post on Facebook. The minute you post on Facebook, what happens? Response comes. This means what? Like. Like means what happens to you?
Happy.
Happy, right? Supposing you get this response, unhappy. So where is your mind now? Happy, unhappy. Likes, dislikes. Likes, dislikes. Your mind is bouncing from likes to dislikes. Your mind now, what has happened? You have handed over your happiness of your mind to others. You might be very happy about this blouse, but the minute you post it on Facebook and you get this, you become unhappy. So what has happened? You have handed over your happiness to others. And worse, if you don't get any response, then even more unhappy also. Right? So likes, dislikes, this is what we are going through every day. The more you keep on going through this, that is what our life is basically. So moha, we should not depend, intelligent, we should live intelligently. Our moha is expecting permanence from the impermanent. Expecting happiness or permanent happiness from the temporary world. So that is nirmoha. We must get over this nirmoha. So how will, how will moha go away? How will this moha go away? Moha is our delusion. How will our delusion go away? Only through viveka. We keep on analyzing every experience that we have. Through viveka we understand. Don't expect permanence from the ego. And the other one was what? It was manam, nirmana, the pride. Pride will only go away when we start practicing humility. So every negative quality can go away when we start practicing the opposite quality. The more humility, the way we conduct ourselves, the way we speak, the way we think, slowly we can condition ourselves to overcome this arrogance or this pride also. So that is one quality he said. The other is jita sangha dosha. Sangha means attachment. Attachment again to all types of objects, people, etc. Due to your name, to your fame, position. So jita means to conquer. Conquer what? Dosha, the evil of attachment. To remove this, that everything belongs to me, this is mine, this is my car, this is my house. So that again, a very important point to remember. Jita sangha dosha. Detach. And very important again, why should I learn to detach? Because the more things my mind is attached to, more and more things my mind is attached to, where is that time for my mind to think of other things? My mind is so preoccupied, whole day running after things, or chasing after things and this and that. So our whole life is basically what? Either acquisition or preservation. Either I'm trying to hold on to whatever I have, which means I have to work hard. If you bought a big bungalow, you have to work hard to pay the installment. Or you're always thinking of what I don't have. When a mind is only preoccupied with acquisition and preservation, where is there time for other things? So you can only free your mind away from this and look for higher things in life when there are less and less attachments. And finally, the one more he gives here. Vinivritta kama. Kama means desires. Vinivritta means free ourselves from desires. Now here again, we have to understand that the scriptures are not saying give up all desires. Because if when people come to temple and they hear spiritual talks, you tell them give up desire, give up desire, give up desire, you know what they give up?
Going to temple.
stop coming to stop this. Why want to go spiritual talk? Every time go, the person says give up desire. How can you give up desire? You cannot give up desires. So what do the scriptures mean when they say vinivritta karma, free yourself from desires? Means what? What do you mean by it? You can't give up desires. By human nature, we have certain desires. Of course, the first thing is give up the adharmic desires. That is very important. Give up the bad desires. Desire to rob, to cheat, to lie, to steal, earn money through dishonest means. Those type of desires you give up. So, okay, we cultivate, but there has to be some good desires. So, what do you mean by give up desires? Otherwise, if you say give up desires, you will lead a very miserable life. I have desire to eat ice cream, cannot eat ice cream. Why? Because Bhagavad Gita says give up desires. I want to go holiday, cannot go holiday. Why? Because Bhagavad Gita says give up desires. So what do I do? Whole day sit down and chant Rama, Rama, Rama? No. So what do you mean by give up desires? Vinivritta karma.
Balance.
Okay, very good. One is have balanced desires at least. Have desires for the world and at the same time have spiritual desires. So one is have balanced desires. Very good. What else? So we have four goals, right? Dharma, Kama, Artha, Moksha. So to Kama and Artha, you also must give some attention. Kama is your desires, Artha is possessions. To Dharma and Moksha, spiritual growth also, you must give some desires also. So have a balanced desires. What else?
Limit the desires.
Have dharmic desires, you can say, cultivate more dharmic desires. So one, have balanced desires, number two, cultivate more dharmic desires. And what is the third most important one? Balanced desires. The third one is, don't be a slave to your desires. If the desire can be satisfied, fine. If it cannot be satisfied, it should not agitate you. Because what is anger? Anger is defined in our shastras as unfulfilled desires. When the intensity for a desire is so strong that you cannot fulfill it, the offshoot is anger. Anger is what? Disturbance of the mind. So any desire you have, can fulfill it, is fine. You cannot fulfill it, you should also accept it. Don't be a slave to your desire, be a master of your desires. That is the difference. So vinivritta karma doesn't mean giving up desires, it means being a master of your desires. And in Bhaja Govindam also, Shankara wrote very beautifully, he said, he called the person mudaha, O fool. He says, give up the thirst to amass wealth. So now, very careful. What is he saying? Give up what? Thirst to amass wealth. Is he saying give up wealth? He's saying what? Give up the thirst. That means what? Trishna uses the word Trishna. Trishna means thirst. He says, give up the thirst to amass wealth. Not, he does not say, don't go and accumulate wealth. So what does he mean by saying give up the thirst to amass wealth? And he calls such people as fools who cannot give up their thirst to amass wealth. What is he trying to warn us from? Not that acquiring wealth is wrong. He's criticizing the thirst to amass wealth, which means what? The obsession or the dependence on wealth for your happiness. Again, we come back to our point. You be a master of that desire. You don't be a slave of the desire. When I have that thirst or that obsession to amass wealth and I cannot amass wealth, then what happens? That's when you find all types of shortcuts. Because that desire has overtaken you already. You are no more in control of the desire. So you can have goals in life, but as I said, the thing is, we must learn to manage the desire. You must be the master of the desire. So, vinivritta karma. And Then he says the next quality here is vimuktaha. Vimuktaha means be free. Free from what? Dvandvaha. Dvandvaha is the pairs of opposites, which all of us have got to learn to go through also. Okay? All kinds of positive and negative situations will happen in our life. We have to learn to go through them, not be affected by them also. And there is only two ways that you can find the inner strength not to be affected by all the pairs of opposites. One is through devotion to Lord, constantly through your prayers, through your devotion to Lord, find that inner strength. And the second is through knowledge. So through bhakti, through jnanam, that is how we develop our inner strength, make our mind strong to go through all these experiences, the dvandvas. And he lists the dvandvas there, sukha, dukha, sometimes favorable, sometimes unfavorable. So all these are virtues that have to be cultivated. Okay, he will expand on this in the next chapter 16 when he will elaborate on 20 virtues. So now the four things he has told us, what are the sadhanas we have to go through. Now the question is, when we go through these sadhanas, what is the ultimate, the end purpose? So now he tells us what happens when you go through these sadhanas. You cultivate the right mindset. Right now our problem is, as I said, the mind is filled with impurities, the mind is filled with attachment. When you cultivate these four sadhanas, there is detachment, these impurities are removed, then what happens? What do you do next? So then he says that in the second line you see that Adhyatma Nitya. Adhyatma means self-knowledge. Adhyatma Nitya, this self-knowledge should be pursued how? Nitya. Nitya means what? Constantly. Don't take this knowledge, scriptural knowledge, like a hobby. It is not a pastime hobby. You know, many people like to quote from the scriptures to show that they are very learned people. It's not something to impress people. It's of no use if you learn this knowledge to impress others. It's not going to benefit you in any way. And if you just learn it for the sake of learning, also no use. So, you must be dedicated. Adhyatma, Nitya means constant learning of the scriptures. So, all this will lead you to having a thirst for the scriptures. Because if you recall, what did Krishna say in chapter 10, verse 10? Very beautiful verse there. You go back to chapter 10, verse 10. Chapter 10, verse 10. If you look at that, page 184. He said that, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, so if you follow all the sadhanas, you have surrendered to Lord, you are devoted to Lord, you love the Lord, everything. He says, I give that yoga of understanding by which they come to me. He will open up that, the thirst for knowledge in you. So all you have to do is follow the four sadhanas. If you follow these four sadhanas with consistency, automatically there will be that thirst for knowledge, Adhyatma Vidya. And once the thirst for knowledge is in you, then you should pursue it with nitya, with dedication, with discipline. You should pursue that constantly dedicated, committed study of the scriptures. So that is the final sadhana. That will lead you to the final sadhana. And once you have gone through the study of the scriptures in a dedicated, committed way, what is the end result? So the end result he gives here in the last line. Amudaha. Amudaha means you become the wise one. Muda means foolish one. Amuda means then you become the wise one. You become the wise one. You have overcome your state of delusion. You have overcome your state of ignorance. Through this spiritual knowledge, you now understand your real nature. What happens? Tat padam. Remember that goal, he said, you should seek that goal. He says, now what happens? That goal, gacchanti, you will attain that goal. That is his ultimate promise. You go through the four sadhanas, you will come automatically to the path of knowledge, take up that path of knowledge with dedication, with commitment, study the knowledge. Once the knowledge is firm in you, you have accepted that you are that eternal consciousness, then that is called you will reach that goal. And how he identifies that goal, he uses one word called avyayam. See, amuda padam avyayam. Tat padam, that goal, gachanti, you will attain. What is that goal? Avyayam. Avyayam means that which is undecaying, that which is imperishable, you will reach that goal. Now what does that mean again? Does it mean you become imperishable? That means you will never die. You will always be here. 1,000 years later you will still be here. What does it mean by you will reach that imperishable goal? Again, while you are living, not while you are dead. The scriptures are not telling you some goal that after you die you go and reach there. Because that type of goal we don't even know whether we will reach or not. First of all, we want to reach that goal while we are living. So he says you will reach that goal which is the undecaying goal while you are living. Which means what? Not that your body won't decay, your body will decay, your mind will decay. Then what goal are you reaching which is undecaying?
State of mind.
It is that state of mind when you accept that I am the undecaying eternal consciousness. You accept that you are not this body, you are not this decaying body. So it is a change of your perception of who you are from what we call from decaying to undecaying. That's why you remember that prayer that we do. What is that prayer? Lead me from, what is that prayer? Asato ma sat gamaya. Asato is what? Antrut. Lead me to truth. Then tamaso ma jyoti gamaya. From darkness lead me to light, which means what?
Ignorance to knowledge.
From ignorance to knowledge. And once you have that knowledge, what is the third line? Mrityu ma amritam gamaya. Mrityu is death. Lead me from death to immortality. Doesn't mean you become immortal. It means you realize that you are immortal. You were never mortal in the first place. You were always immortal. The problem is you have never realized this. So when he says lead me from death to immortal, I realize that always I have been immortal. So that's what he means. You will reach that goal, that immortal, that undecaying, that imperishable goal. Now, what is that imperishable goal also? He describes now in the next verse. He expands that what is that imperishable. And it's one of the very beautiful and very often quoted verses also in the Gita, verse number 6. That you reach this goal. And the goal always, when we talk about imperishable, we are talking about that absolute Brahman, which is nirguna, which has no form, no shape, no size, no color. So Brahman is actually beyond description. You cannot describe Brahman. See, if you see a red apple, I ask you to describe red apple, you can beautifully describe. You can say apple is red, it tastes sweet. But Brahman has got no attributes. So how do you describe it? So why is it that Brahman has got no description? Adi Shankaracharya, when he wrote a commentary on the Mandukya Upanishad, he said there are 5 reasons why we cannot describe Brahman. There is no description for Brahman because of 5 reasons. What are the 5 factors? The first factor is called jati. Jati means class or species. Now what do you mean by jati or class or species? Supposing you take a cow. Cow has got very specific common characteristics, isn't it? If you see one cow, you can describe all the rest of the cows because they have the same characteristics. But Bhagwan does not have any specific characteristics. You cannot say Bhagwan has this type of eyes, this type of nose, this type of mouth, that is all Bhagwan. No, because Bhagwan doesn't have eyes, he doesn't have nose, nothing. So there are no common characteristics. The second is guna. Guna means quality. Now what do we mean by quality? If I tell you go and pick one red flower for me. That means what? You know that there is a red flower you have to pick. So you won't pick yellow flower, you won't pick blue flower. Very specific red flower. But again, Bhagwan is Nirguna. He doesn't have a specific quality. He is Nirguna. Third is, okay, if I cannot describe by quality, I can at least describe by the third factor, which is called Kriya. Kriya means function. Now, for example, what am I doing now? I am speaking. Speaking. So you can say the speaker, right? And you are listening. So I can say you are the listener. So by function I can identify who you are. But what is Brahman? Brahman doesn't have a to-do list. He's got nothing to do actually. He is the silent witness. So how do you...
What about creation, protection...
Correct, but that is all his Shakti. He actually does nothing. He's got powers that carry on doing everything. He does nothing. Okay. He's the big boss. He sits there doing nothing. Okay. He's got all his people running around doing things for him. So he has no function also. Okay, then we say there's another way to identify people. How? Sambandham, relationship. I can say this person, he is the son, this is his father. There's a relationship. Husband, wife, there's a relationship. But Brahman has got no relationship. Who is he related to? There is no second, there is only one Brahman. So there is no relationship. The final one is called Ruri, R-U-R-I, which we mean, what we mean is convention. Now, what do we mean by convention? Supposing you call a person by the name Ramesh. So, you say, from this day onwards, this child will be known as Ramesh. So, you have given him the name. Always, he will be known as Ramesh. By what? Not by action or not by which family he belongs. Just by convention. So, again, Brahman, can you point to a specific point and say... You can say, this is Ramesh, right? When you point to that person, I say, who is Ramesh? This is Ramesh. Can you point to that and say, this is Brahman? Where is Brahman? So, Brahman also has got no name which we can specifically point to. So now this becomes the biggest problem of the scriptures. Then how to tell you what is that goal, what is that Brahman? So they can only tell you in abstract terms, very abstract terms. Either they use space or they use light to tell you what is this Brahman. Okay? So how can you experience this Brahman? One method the scriptures give us is that through silence. Silence means what? What do you mean by silence? Silence is not just going sitting in the room and keeping quiet. No, what do you mean by silence? See, throughout the day, the clock is ticking in your house, you know. Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. You cannot hear that clock. Why can't you hear that clock? So many other external noise. TV is on, cooking is going on, people are talking. At night, 12 o'clock, midnight, everybody is sleeping. You take your Bhagavad Gita book, you sit down, you start reading. What do you hear? Tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. Why? Because the outside noise has been silent. So the clock has been ticking all the time, but you have not been able to hear because of the external. So what is the silence here the scriptures are talking about? What is the silence? Not just keeping quiet, maunam. Maunam, just keep quiet, suddenly you realize what? Silence is the turbulence in our mind because of all these impurities. Thoughts about the past, thoughts about the future, thoughts, all the impurities. This fellow said this to me, I want to do, tomorrow I'm going to hammer that fellow, I'm going to do this. These are all the chatterings of the mind. Until we cannot remove all these chatterings, the mind cannot be silent. So silence means learning how to silence the mind. That is one method. The second is called neti neti, which we discuss. Na iti, not this, not that. Now, they are trying to teach you how to negate. Am I this body? No, you're not this body. Negate. Am I the mind? No, you're not the mind. Negate. So that's called neti-neti. So that is how we try to understand what is the consciousness, because it cannot be described. So now, what here the scriptures are telling us also in the same way, he says, what is that goal? He says that goal is tat bhashayate na tat bhashayate. Na, it does not, that goal, tat na bhashayate, it does not illumine. Okay? It is not something which is illumined. Na tat bhashayate. So, what is it now? He explains. What cannot illumine? This is a goal which cannot be illumined. Okay, which cannot be shined upon. By what? Surya. The sun also cannot reveal this to you also. That goal is somewhere where the sun's rays also cannot reveal this Brahman to you. Surya is the sun. And that's why, you know, when you go and do the aarti in the very traditional temples, the evening when they do the aarti, you know that the altar actually is in darkness. That is the traditional way of doing aarti. The altar actually is in darkness. And when the aarti is lit, at that point of time, the light of the flame will light up the altar. What is that significance? What is a symbolic message that is telling us that this aarti is lighting up that darkness there. What is it trying? That God is in the altar, but it is totally dark. You can't see the deity. But at that appointed time when the aarti is lit, the flame is lit and showed or offered in front of the altar, suddenly you can see the deity now. So what does it symbolically tell you? So God is there all the time, but the light helps us to realize light represents knowledge. Light represents knowledge. When my mind is illumined with that knowledge, I will be able to realize that one. So that is very symbolical. But here he is saying the sun also cannot light up that God, also cannot show you the way to God. And there's a beautiful prayer which is in one of the Upanishads. I'm sure you would have heard this at Chinmaya Missions, they normally recite Na tatra surya vati a chandra tarakam Nema vidyuto bhanti Kutoyam agnihi Tam eva bantam Anubhati Tam eva bantam Tam eva bantam Anubhati sarvam Tasya vasha sarvam idam vibhati. Now what it means is this: Na tatra surya vati. God is in a place where the Suryo, the sun, cannot shine. Na Chandra, even the moon also cannot shine there. Na Tarakam, even stars also cannot shine there. Nema Vidyuto Bhanti, even lightning, strikes of lightning also cannot shine there. Kutoyam Agnihi, what more to speak about fire? When such a huge ball of sun, moon, lightning, all cannot shine, what more to talk about Agni, fire? So, it says here, Tam eva bantam, you are the very effulgence by which everything shines. So, why is it that the sun cannot shine, the moon cannot shine? Because you are the great effulgence by which everything shines. It is like you switch on the torchlight, and the torchlight is powered by what? Battery. If you take out the battery, what happens to torchlight? Light is gone. So what is the source of the light? It's the battery. So the source of every light is that one brilliance, that God or that Brahman that we call. So now he says that the sun cannot shine. Na shashanko. Shanko means the moon. The moon also cannot illumine. That's what he's saying in this verse. Na pavaka. Pavaka is fire. So all the three, the sun, the moon and the fire, cannot shine. Now, but he tells you what? when you reach that state where the sun doesn't shine, the moon doesn't shine, fire doesn't shine, tad gatva, when you reach that state, na nivartante, you won't come back. So that means what? You are going to go, when you reach the state of realization, you are going to go to a place which is very, very, what? What type of place will you go to? Huh? Where the sun doesn't shine, where the moon doesn't shine, where the fire doesn't shine, what type of place is it? What type of place is it? Very dark place. Isn't it? If you take the direct reading of this verse, you reach that place where the sun, the moon, the fire all don't shine. So that means what? It is such a dark, dark place. And again, when it says you reach, you must not think that it is some sort of travel. Not that you are going to leave this body and travel somewhere. So what does this mean actually? So what does it mean that you reach a place that you don't return? And Krishna says, that dhamma, that state which you reach is my paramam dhamma. It is my permanent state. That means you are going to reach that place where God resides. He says, that is my dhamma, my home, which is my permanent home. Where the sun doesn't shine, the moon doesn't shine, the fire doesn't shine. When you reach the state of realization, you will reach that state. So what is actually, what are they trying to tell us? Not that it is some dark place. Not that we have to travel somewhere to reach there. So what is that place? I want you to go back, think about it, and then you come back next week and you see where is that place we are going to reach once we reach the state of enlightenment. Any questions so far? No questions? Okay, so we end with the prayer. Vasudeva Sudam Devam.